Welcome to I Run Radio. Coming up, how one woman has used running to cope and to raise money.
It's a way for it to help me to cope. It's a way to help me sort of feel better. You know about the endorphins from running, and even if you don't really feel like getting out there within the first 15 or 20 minutes, you're usually pretty happy that you did.
The joy of racing for the kids.
Oh, just an incredible morning. I ran the 15K, and there was a 25K that went ahead of us, but just incredible the amount of people participating.
And tackling an ultra marathon of more than 200 miles.
And I thought, I'm so lucky to be out here. I chose to do this. So, you know, keep going and see how it goes. And one foot in front of the other turned into 206.5 miles later.
All of that and more coming up on I Run Radio. We're joined, as always, by iRun's editor and general manager, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
How are you?
I can't complain.
I've got to take my hat off to you because you had a great run, actually two great runs, in last week's Army Run here in Ottawa. You came down for the weekend, and you did the 5K in just under 19 minutes, and then you did the half marathon in just over an hour and 30 minutes, and you finished fifth overall in what's called the Commander's Challenge, the combination of those two races. Fifth overall out of more than 2,000 people who did this race.
Well, I appreciate you saying such kind words, but unfortunately, I forgot to use Vaseline. And so after I finished this triumphant race, I hopped in the shower and I screamed so loud I may not be invited to stay back into my Airbnb.
Wow. So it hurt at the end.
It hurt at the end. That's right.
But look, it was a hot day, and I was very happy with how the race went. I was surprised. I ran pretty fast for me, nothing like your speed, but I was happy with the outcome. But it was hot. I was drenched with sweat by the end of it. In fact, the soldier who gave me my medal at the end said, "You look like you swam to the finish." And you, despite all of that, pulled off a fantastic time, despite the heat.
I mean, there is nothing like this. So, I mean, it seems so strange, the soldiers giving you a medal at the end, doesn't it? That was just like, wow, you know, because whatever we just did is nothing compared to putting yourselves in harm's way. So that was truly something. And your race was great. And yeah, the whole thing was just a beautiful day for running. And of course, there was beautiful runs all around. And a lot of people are catching the spirit right now. So it's a good time to be us.
Yeah, something like 21,000 people in the various events at the Army Run last weekend. There was a 5K, a 10K, the half marathon. There was the Commander's Challenge that you and I both did, which is the combination of the 5K and the half marathon. There was the Vimy Challenge, which was the 5K and the 10K. So there was something for everyone. And it really is a unique event, an inspiring event, because you get to run with injured, ill, and disabled soldiers. You get to see soldiers staffing the water stations and contributing and helping out along the route and at the finish line. And I saw a couple of, I mean, there's a guy who has no arms and no legs and did the Commander's Challenge, just like us, the 5K and the half marathon, on a skateboard.
That's Chris Koch.
Yeah.
We have an interview with him. I interview him every year, and he is, he was worried about the heat, but he did it. And I tell you what, though, I mean, all of these things are, what he exemplifies is just that sort of running spirit writ large.
Yeah.
You know, because he was concerned about the heat the day before and everything. But when he was out there on the course, he was gutting it out and doing it. And, but he was also had the wherewithal that I was like, come on, Chris, go, Chris. He was like, yeah, Ben, I'm doing it. You know, he was enjoying the process. And you and I go back and forth about this so often. But it's sort of like, you know, he in his extremities and in his experience, which is, I mean, I couldn't even imagine. And he was born without arms or legs and to do the Commander's Challenge. But it's not even, it's his spirit is the same spirit that drives all of us to find that next finish line, to get out the door, to choose to do something, to aim high, you know? And he just, he's something else. But what he has inside of him, I think, is something that you know, all of us aspire to and all of us can summon, you know?
And
all of us have within.
He's always smiling. Whenever I saw him on the course, he was smiling.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. Very impressive, very inspiring.
And it was so hot out there, and he was doing it on his boot. And you can see him, and it just looks like, because it's one thing to interview him on the day before the race, but to see him out there, what it actually looks like, how he actually does it. In fact, I'm going to make a video so people really can get an idea of what we're talking about, because what's required of him to move like that is, he puts his sort of like his arm stub in a boot and kind of moves forward. It just seems, and there was hills. It's not a flat course. It's relatively, it's not the Boston Marathon, but to move the way he does, the hills just seemed massive when I did to put myself in his shoes.
Yeah, no question. Very inspiring. Now, are you, having had a great race last weekend, are you all fired up now to do more racing?
All fired up. My friend put it best. He said, the only thing that keeps you from running is not running, and the only thing that keeps you from racing is not racing. So once you throw yourself into the pool of this stuff, it's like all you want to do is keep going. So don't show me a cookie. I want to get into it. I'm ready to go, because what you do too. When I run by myself, I will not push myself like I will in a race. The races, you call it a race, call it whatever you want to, but it's sort of, because you can't win, you can't lose. It's just you out there doing it. But the beauty of the thing is, we just don't know what we're capable of until we put ourselves in these little situations. And then once you do, you surprise yourself. Your run was so good because when you think to yourself, you're like, I'll probably do, whatever your time was. You're sort of safety, because it's very hard to push when you're just going by yourself in the morning, like doing the lap around your house, but when you get into these events, it's like, wow, that's pretty impressive. I'm pretty impressed with myself. I feel pretty good. I want to do it again.
Right on. Well, good luck in whatever you start training for now. I think we're both thinking about doing the Toronto Marathon next month, the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. So that could be the next goal for both of us. We've got a great show coming up today. We're going to talk to the wife of our runner-in-chief at iRun, Rais Ahab, Kathy Adams, who is an incredible runner in her own right and just did a 330-kilometer race. We're going to talk to her a little bit later. We're also going to talk to a couple of people who are raising money for charity. We've talked many times about Julie Drury, who's incredible. She's going to join us coming up. So, Ben, thank you for your time today, and congrats again on the Army Run last week.
Well, congratulations to you, and I look forward to running with you again soon.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.
That's iRun's editor and general manager, Ben Kaplan. Coming up next, we'll talk to the inspiring runner and fundraiser, Julie Drury. We'll be right back. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge, four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Welcome back to iRun Radio. We've shared Julie Drury's story with you before. We talk about her in the latest charity issue of iRun. Julie lost her daughter, Kate, to mitochondrial disease last year, and throughout her painful journey, she's been raising money and awareness for Team Mito Canada. Running and fundraising has become part of her way of life. Julie, thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Mark. It's good to talk to you.
And you have some news, first of all, that I think is worth sharing. Your members of your team are getting an award. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we're really excited. I just found out a few short weeks ago that Team Mito Canada in Ottawa, and specifically the kids, our Team Mito Canada kids, are being awarded the MVP award from Mito Canada Foundation as leaders in terms of raising awareness and raising funds for Mito Canada Foundation. So pretty excited about that. We've got a lot of kids that run for our team, and they're a pretty incredible group, about 50 to 75 children who run for our charity team.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. Many are children in our community that sort of knew our family story and go to the schools that are local to our neighborhood. And then, we have a group of other kids that, I don't know directly, and our family don't know directly, but who have heard through word of mouth about Mito Canada and Team Mito Canada and chose to run for the foundation. So it's pretty exciting. I'm really proud of them.
That's amazing. And congratulations to them for that. And of course, you were telling me recently that this is the awareness month. September is the month where you're trying to raise awareness about this disease, right?
Yeah, September is Global Mitochondrial Disease Awareness, and in Canada specifically, September 17th to 23rd is Awareness Week. So there's a number of different events where we try to raise awareness across the country, and MitoCanada Foundation are going to be hosting their first ever conference and symposium with clinicians and researchers, as well as patients and families. And the opportunity for them to do that as a foundation, a lot of it, you know, resources are required and money is required. And, you know, I'm really proud that our team here in Ottawa who compete at Race Weekend have been able to support that through the money that we've raised for our charity.
How much money have you raised with your team at Ottawa Race Weekend? And give us some of the other numbers, too, in terms of how many people have participated and how much this has grown.
Yeah, so we're into our sixth year. We're well over $100,000 raised.
Wow.
Which is an incredible number, right, over 6 years. We have some years that are much more dense and where there's a whole lot more participation and focus on the team than others. Certainly 2016 was a very big year for us, and it was a very powerful year for the team following the passing of my daughter, Kate. So, yeah, we're well over $100,000. In terms of team participation, we've grown from a motley crew of maybe 25 to 50 runners, competing in all different events at Ottawa Race Weekend. And our biggest year, we would have been well over 150 people participating on Team MitoCanada.
And of course, registration is open for Ottawa Race Weekend. Seems like a long way from now because it's next May, but if you're planning a fundraising effort, if you're putting together a team, this is the time to start doing that groundwork. So are you already underway on the planning for putting your team together and raising more money in 2018?
Yeah, I'm hoping 2018 is going to be a big year for us. We try to, you know, sort of offset the years where we really try to make a big push. So this year would be a big push year for us. We're already in contact with the Ottawa Race Weekend folks about having our team officially registered. And that's a pretty easy process now because they've gotten to know us very well. And their leadership is great that way. The Scotiabank Charity Challenge folks have a really, you know, well-developed system for supporting the different charities that are represented at Ottawa Race Weekend. So, you know, we'll start that groundwork now. We'll start to contact the team members who've already run for us in the past and sort of, you know, let them know that registration's open and they might want to start getting their running shoes back on and thinking about what events they might want to do. Really, I find the heaviest part of or the heaviest months of registration for us tend to be sort of in the midwinter, you know, sort of leaning towards early spring in March. People really start to get excited about race weekend a couple of months out. So unless you're training for the marathon or the half, people start to get excited around that time of year. But yeah, we're starting the momentum now.
All right. And what has running meant for you, Julie? Because I see you out there sometimes. Our paths cross when we're both running. And you've been through, obviously, a very challenging time in the last couple of years. What has running meant for you and how has it kept you going?
Yeah, I mean, I started running, as you know, probably about 7 years ago now. And I started it because I really needed something to keep me physically active and keep me strong, but also just give me that time to be away from the challenges of life and truly the challenges that we were facing here as a family. And that sort of continues a theme for me while I'm going through just, you know, an incredible grief after losing Kate. It's a way to help me to cope. It's a way to help me sort of feel better. You know about the endorphins from running, and even if you don't really feel like getting out there within the first 15 or 20 minutes, you're usually pretty happy that you did. So it's not coming as easy for me. You know, sometimes I wanted to stay sort of curled up in bed, but I really do try to get out with some regularity, and I know it makes me feel better and makes me want to get out the next day. I haven't picked off any big races right now. I'm really trying to sort of, you know, conserve my energy where I need to. So I'm just enjoying getting out and running and not training for anything in particular right now. And that's kind of another mindset for me, right? I've always been picking what the next race was going to be, which marathon was going to be next.
Sure.
And now I'm just running for the really enjoyment with it and taking the watch off my wrist and not following a structured plan. So that's been kind of nice too.
It's interesting what you said about how maybe in the first 10, 15 minutes you don't necessarily appreciate it, but once you get a little deeper into the run, that's when you really start to feel the benefit of it, not just physically, but mentally. I know that's the experience of a lot of runners, but that's when you really start to say, okay, yeah, there's a reason why I did this, and I'm feeling it now.
Yeah, and I think too, for me, I tend to run in the morning, and if that morning run doesn't happen, it really changes the tone for my day. I might feel a bit more sluggish, and I don't feel as accomplished. And I kind of feel like hanging over me throughout the day, I should have gone for my run. So I find, you know, getting that done first thing really sort of sets me up for my day. And you know, for even the busiest person out there, you can always set that alarm a little bit earlier and get out there. And it does change how you manage your day and how you feel about your day. And I can't say enough of it. You know, from a mental health point of view and going through, you know, depression myself after the loss of my daughter, it's almost an essential part of your self-care, right? It's not always easy to do. That's why you try to run with friends or find a group or, you know, people to support you, as I have. But it does pay off for you, you know, throughout your day and sort of connecting those days together.
And of course, you've combined your running with this fundraising mission that you have now. Tell me what that has meant for you to have this cause that you're behind, you're passionate about. Obviously, it's deeply connected to your family and to your life and to your grief and how you're dealing with that. So what has that meant for you?
You know, it's incredible to see the outpouring of support. I think. Initially, you know, it was centered around, as I said, our community and our family and the people who knew us. And we were really feeling that support as a family as we were going through the health experience with Kate. You know, now it's evolved into people who are learning more about the disease, which is so important to me, learning about mitochondrial disease, increasing awareness amongst not only the general population, but, you know, health professionals. And I think the thing I'm most proud of is how much money Team MitoCanada raises for MitoCanada Foundation. In fact, the money raised by all the Team Mito members is the largest pool of money. It's the largest resource that the MitoCanada Foundation has. It's the foundation relies on the money raised in these events and others across the country more than any other resource income for the foundation. So that's huge and so very important for a very small, you know, new foundation, relatively new foundation. And I think the other part of it for me that it's so inspirational is that in 2016, we were able to, all the money raised stayed here locally in Ottawa. It went specifically to the Research Institute at CHEO under the guidance of Dr. Martin Holsick. And Martin is doing a significant amount of research into mitochondrial disease, mitochondrial functioning, and specifically into the disease that affected my daughter, Kate. And he even has her cells that he's been using on a continuous and regenerative basis to review the disease and to investigate it and to learn more about it and moving towards a goal of treatment and maybe it's someday a cure. So everybody who's been involved in Team Mito in Ottawa has contributed to that. And that's just beyond, I can't describe the emotion that brings to me.
So your daughter effectively is still part of the research that's going forward to try to find a cure eventually.
Yeah, Kate's cells and Kate's genetic information, you know, with our consent, are being used on a regular basis for research into mitochondrial disease.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a big thing for us. I mean, it's a strange kind of thing to think of that's happening, and she's still sort of over there in some way, shape, or form. But I know she's in very good hands, and I know that her genetics and her genetic information are being treated with the utmost respect and toward a goal of really understanding this condition and understanding how it affects so many people across the country. It's 1 in 4 that are affected by mitochondrial disease. It's not a small population, and the disease is a foundation for so many other much more well-known diseases such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis and some forms of cancer. Mitochondria are the very base functioning of our body, as you know, right? It's what makes the energy for us.
Yeah.
So the more we know about it and the more basic science that we can conduct around it, the more we're going to learn about how to manage and potentially cure these other conditions as well.
And of course, so much other great work is being done in Kate's memory because of your team and all the people who have signed on and are running because of her. So that legacy is significant as well. I'm sure that gives you some comfort.
Yeah, I mean, I love the past 2 years that we decided to go away from our signature green shirts, and we went to pink shirts, hot pink shirts with a nice big heart on the back and Kate's name. And, you know, I think this year we'll go back to our signature green. But in Ottawa, the team will always carry a nice pink heart with Kate's name on our shirts. I think her life and her legacy were the foundation for Team Mitokanda here in Ottawa. And, you know, there are many other families here in Ottawa who are part of Team Mitokanda that, you know, participate on the team as well. But I think there's a uniqueness around Kate's story and in our family. And I think we're always going to carry that legacy with us as long as Team Mitokanda is here.
Well, you're doing amazing work, Julie. I don't know how you do it. You've inspired so many people, and you're continuing to push on to raise more money and to solve some of the challenges that these doctors and researchers are trying to tackle. Congratulations on what you've done and continued success. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Mark. I always appreciate the time.
That's Julie Drury of Team Mitokanada. One of many incredible people that we've profiled in the charity issue of iRun. You can read more at irun.ca. Coming up next, we're going to talk to another runner and fundraiser who's part of the RBC Race for the Kids. We'll be right back. iRun Radio is brought to you by the Niagara Falls International Marathon, crossing the Peace Bridge from the U.S. into Canada on October 15th, 2017. The Niagara Falls International Marathon is celebrating its 20th anniversary as one of the most unique races in the world. Our next guest is another runner and fundraiser. Ann Morrison is one of many people participating in the RBC Race for the Kids this weekend. Along with raising some money, she's gotten a little bit hooked on running as she's entered different events. Ann, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into running.
So I started running back in 2013 with a goal of just, for me, it was more just focusing on my health. And I had a long-term goal that I might like to run a 5K or a 10K. And so I started running in the spring of 2013 and really happy to share that I've made great progress over the last few years, where last year I actually ran the half marathon in the Army Run. And for me, that was a real highlight that I was able to achieve that.
Tell me a little bit about how it progressed after you started, because it started out, I don't think you started out thinking I'm going to run a half marathon one day. You were trying to get a bit of exercise. So how did it move from there?
To be honest, I actually set a goal to run a 10K. There was an upcoming community event. It was in South Ottawa, and it was called South Ottawa Race Day. And there was a community event for fundraising that through RBC we were also supporting. So I ran my goal was to run the 10K. So and we achieved that. And then what I started doing was just picking different runs that I wanted to go in. So the following year, I signed up for Ottawa Race Weekend for the 10K. So I just started picking different races, all supporting local charities that I would be able to set goals up against, and was really pleased kind of how it's progressed over the last few years that I was able to run the half marathon.
And so at a certain point, did you start feeling like, yeah, I'm a runner now, and this is what I do, and I don't really want to stop?
Yeah, I actually really enjoy it again. That to me, the health benefits are there. It really helps clear my mind. I know for sure I'm not very fast, but I really enjoy going for a good long run. And I download music, I download podcasts, I download books to listen to as I run. So for me, sometimes I don't even realize how far I've gone, and I start turning around to come back home again.
Right on. Tell me a little bit about the fundraising aspect of this for you, what it means for you to be raising money for important causes, and why you do that, and how it helps your running.
Well, for me, I've actually always had a passion for kids and youth. So really pleased with RBC's partnership with CHEO and Race for the Kids. I actually participated in the Race for the Kids in Toronto a couple of years ago. So really excited to have the inaugural race here in Ottawa. And my son actually had surgery at CHEO a couple of years ago. And when I think about kind of the nurses, the doctors, just the amazing team they have at CHEO, and I always hear such incredible stories coming out of CHEO to really focus on helping support this event and helping support the local community. I'm very excited to be able to participate in the run, but also in support of CHEO as well.
Yeah, and I've heard other runners talk about how having that sense of purpose about their running, knowing that their running is not just creating some benefits for them, but also for the community, that helps them keep going.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And I think all of the races I've been going in, and I don't necessarily call them races, I call them more runs for
sure.
Me, is I'm not the fastest, but for me, I am giving back locally to the community. And I know, again, the health benefits for me and for the community.
Let's talk about that Race for Kids that you experienced in Toronto, because as you mentioned, this is the first one in Ottawa, so there'll be people doing it for the first time. Tell me a little bit more about what it was like racing in that event.
Oh, just an incredible morning. I ran the 15K, and there was a 25K that went ahead of us, and we got to run through the streets of Toronto. I think we kicked off at about 6:30 that morning, but just incredible the amount of people participating. And there were people from running that 25K that had a real goal in mind from a time perspective that went all the way to the family walks and runs. And I saw lots of families going out together with strollers, et cetera. And it was just amazing to see going through the streets of Toronto just how many people were getting involved to me within the community, but also for the health, because I think it was really early on a Saturday morning that we kicked off as well.
Sure. And do you have a fundraising goal for the Race for Kids?
I do. My goal is $1,000 for the Race for the Kids. I think we're almost there. And I know as an organization that the teams throughout RBC have actually been very supportive. We've been holding some fundraising events. We've had trivia nights and some barbecues. So all contributing to that overall goal.
Okay. Well, good for you and good luck with that. Now, I want to come back to the Army Run half marathon that you did and what the experience was like for you, first of all, participating in that event, and secondly, crossing the finish line of your first half marathon.
I have to say that's probably one of the most humbling runs I've ever had. I think for anyone that has participated in the Army Run, you would have seen many individuals running with, I'm going to say, full Army gear on, backpacks, boots on. To me, they were very inspirational. There are individuals in wheelchairs doing the half marathon, and as I stayed even in pace with some of them and ran into others along the way, I think for me that was most inspirational. For anyone that ran last year, it was very, very hot last year. So I know a lot of people were very cautious and taking in a lot of fluids, et cetera, because just the race itself just being so hot. But I think for me, crossing that finish line was pretty triumphant. And I think that's probably the longest race I'll do. I think I'm going to stick to the 10K now and in the future.
Okay. And what's next for you after the Race for Kids? What do you plan to do after that?
Actually, just before the Race for the Kids, I'm doing the Army Run. The Army Run has a 10K this year.
Yep.
So that's actually the week before the Race for the Kids this year. And I haven't booked anything in after that. So I'm actually interested in starting to look a little bit outside the community. And a Disney run has also been of interest to me. So that might be something that I might put on my radar for the future.
All right. Well, Ann, thank you so much for joining us on iRun Radio. And good luck with your fundraising and your training, and thank you for what you're doing to support the Race for the Kids and to support the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario.
Thank you, Mark.
That's Ann Morrison, who's one of many runners participating in the RBC Race for the Kids this weekend in Ottawa. Coming up next, we'll talk to a runner who just completed a 330-kilometer race. We'll be right back. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Our next guest on iRun Radio is Kathy Adams. Kathy just completed the Bigfoot 200. That's a 200-mile or 330-kilometer race. Yes, 330 kilometers. Kathy has done several ultramarathons, but this was the longest she has run so far. Now, it's worth noting that Kathy is married to my friend and iRun runner-in-chief, Ray Zahab, who, of course, has done many incredible things, running across the Sahara Desert, running to the South Pole, doing all of these amazing expeditions and adventures. Kathy, great to talk to you again. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's go back a little bit. What made you decide to start taking on these longer distances? I know you're married to a guy who runs really far, but obviously you have to like this too, or you wouldn't be out there running for hundreds of miles at a time. So what was the inspiration for this, and how did it develop?
I guess, yeah, being married to Ray makes running 100 miles seem very normal, I would say. So I've done a couple of those and was kind of wondering what it might be like to go even further. So I started Googling some races and found this race called Bigfoot 200. So it was 206.5 miles, which for us Canadians is 330.4. And I thought I would give it a try.
Okay. But obviously when you did those 100-milers and when you did other ultra-marathons, you must have enjoyed the experience, because just this is not something you can do unless you're getting something out of it. Nobody's going to slog it out for that long without at least relishing it on some level.
No, for sure. I mean, I love running. It gets me out of the house. I usually run with friends. I would say I'm not much of a lone runner, so I usually, if a race offers the option to have pacers, I usually get some friends to come out and join me. And I just love being outside and challenging myself.
And tell me a little bit about what the experience has been like as you've added mileage and discovered that you could run further than most people even could imagine doing. So what has that felt like for you to say, yeah, I can run 100 miles?
Pretty good, I would say. It's interesting to test yourself and just see what you can do when you set your mind to something. I really enjoy the training. For me, it's just about getting to the start line and then see what happens, because I don't even think of it as a race. It's, for me, I just go there thinking, okay, it's a really long run. And I really like that.
So
I wouldn't say I'm not a competitive person. Maybe competitive with myself, but
right.
But when I go to these things, it's for me.
Even though you do really well in them anyway, Ray is always bragging about how how well you do. So, but that's not what it's about for you.
No, it really isn't. For me, it's just the experience and just to push myself and see what I can do.
So tell me a little bit about the training for the Bigfoot 200. What was that like? How much were you running and how did it all work?
We have two young kids. I have a full-time job, and Ray travels, 4 or 5 months of the year. So my training is actually pretty light, 3 to 4 times a week. If I get 4 runs in a week, that's a good week for me. Not major distance. I usually go by time. So, 2 or 3 hours on a Friday, another couple on Saturday, and a couple on Sunday, and then a shorter run during the week. That's sort of, I would say my longest run was 4 hours. I did two of those. And then I did a couple of longer hikes, one in the Adirondacks with some friends for, 6-7 hours. And then I did a presidential traverse of the White Mountains 3 weeks before my race, which took about 10 hours.
Okay,
of hiking,
wow.
Slash running.
Yeah. And so you're only running a few times a week, which is unusual for ultra distance training, but you're you're trying to get out there for longer runs on three consecutive days. So you're kind of bunching them up together, which probably creates some additional training benefit in terms of endurance, I would think.
For sure. You know, I follow whatever program Ray gives me. And, you know, Mark, so much of it is mental, really. I mean, of course, you have to have some conditioning. But especially in these really long races, it really comes down to mental, that mental ability to keep going when everything is saying stop, and being able to really open your mind and say, can I put one foot in front of the other? If the answer is yes, you keep going, and you just repeat that over and over. For me, in this race especially, I found, you know, some areas were really hot and exposed, and you could see people way ahead of you, and you could see that they were slogging up the mountain, and I thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? But then I decided to, like, you know, take it easier, and just, I stopped, I took some photos, I looked around, I thought, I'm so lucky to be out here. I chose to do this. So, you know, keep going and see how it goes. And one foot in front of the other turned into 206.5 miles later.
Wow. So describe the event. Where is it? And what's the, you mentioned mountains already. Describe the whole experience.
So it's located in Washington State in the Cascade Mountains, 206.5 miles, with about close to 48,000 feet of elevation up and about 46 down. A lot of elevation change, huge mountains, lots and lots of climbing, but really stunning scenery. You know, Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, Mount Rainier, you know, views of all of those mountains. It was pretty spectacular.
So you're talking about 330 kilometers here. How long does that take, and how much rest are you building into that? So just walk us through kind of what your plan for the race was even before you started running.
Yeah, so, you know, for me it was just to finish. You have 105 hours to finish. And so my goal was just that. You know, if I can finish in 105 hours, I'm super happy. So I took it really easy at the start.
So just to be clear, that's a little over 4 days, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just over 4 days. So I tried to keep my aid station stops. The aid stations were about 20 to 30 kilometers apart. So, you know, I tried to minimize how much time I would take there. But inevitably, as the race went on, they took longer and longer. But I slept every 100K, 120K. For about 45 minutes for the first two, and then my third sleep was 10 minutes before finishing the last 42K of the race. So
you only slept for
less than three hours.
Yeah, less than 3 hours over how long?
So 79 hours and 52 minutes.
Wow.
Which was way exceeded my expectations. When I was finishing out my last 20K on the road, I was able to have my crew come out and join me for that section. So four or five of my crew came out, and we were running, and they were like, you're going to break 80 hours. And I said, no. And they said, yeah, if you keep this pace, you can break 80 hours. So that was it. I just hunkered down and, you know, looked at my watch and managed to sneak in under the 80, which was really, really amazing for me.
Which meant that you made it with a full day to spare, right?
A day and an hour.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
But basically, over the course of 3 days, you only slept for 2 hours and 45 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. But according to Ray, who was sort of tracking all my, how much time I spent at each aid station, he figures probably more like 10 hours in total if you added up all the rest time of, you know, sitting down to, you know, tend to my blisters, which there were many, you know, changing my clothes to go into the night sections, that sort of thing. So taking some time to eat, that sort of thing, probably 10 hours in total.
10 hours of resting, but not of sleeping.
But not of sleeping, no.
So how hard does it get, Kathy, when you're deep into this and you still have a long way to go? How difficult is it to keep moving? What are you feeling physically and mentally?
You know, I had a crew. I had, you know, eight of my friends there, and so they really helped me to keep moving forward. And I have to say, it sounds odd, but I never really had a super hard, like, period of time because, you know, my friends just kept me moving and Ray was there and it was just, it was actually fun. but I would say, you know, I did remind myself that I was lucky to be out there and thought about my two girls and how I wanted to be able to show them that, you know, if you set a goal and you work toward it, that you can achieve it. If you, you know, if you really want something, you go after it and you can achieve it. So those kind of things kept me moving.
Wow. Well, you certainly did that. And that's so impressive. Under 80 hours for 330 kilometers. That's incredible. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And what's next? I understand you're going to do another event now in October.
Yeah, this one is this one's for fun. I have a group of amazing women that I run with on my Friday mornings that I've been running with for just over 10 years, and we decided we should all do something together. So we signed up for this race called Grand Circle Trail Fest, and it's in Kanab, Utah. So there's one day in Bryce Canyon, I think it's maybe 25K.
Right.
And then the next day you do about the same distance in Zion. And then on the third day you do 35K in the Grand Canyon, something like that. So
that sounds pretty cool.
We're going to go there in the beginning of October. So it should,
okay.
should be lots of fun.
And you should be ready for those distances after running 335 kilometers.
Yeah, yep. My training is just, you know, some shorter, faster runs right now, just to get my legs moving, but nothing wrong right now.
And how long did it take you to recover from the Bigfoot Ultra?
Probably 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, that first week I was able to do a couple of short, you know, 3K runs just to move my legs and stuff. But to be completely honest, I would say 3 weeks. To feel like I'm ready to run the way I normally run again.
And how much did you sleep that night?
Not that much. I would have thought more, but, you know, your feet are throbbing afterwards.
Yeah.
They're three times the size, and you keep waking up every time you got to roll over. And, yeah, so, no, I never – it took me a while to catch up on my sleep.
Yeah, no kidding. I always find it, I mean, I'm not running ultras, but the night of a marathon, you'd think you'd be exhausted and you'd fall asleep easily, but you're still buzzing a bit, your legs are sore,
yeah.
You're uncomfortable, so it's not actually the best night's sleep. You'd think it would be, but it isn't.
Yeah, totally.
Well, congratulations again, Kathy. That's remarkable, and I look forward
Thank
to hearing
you.
About this next journey that you're on with your friends, and then you'll probably tackle some other big ultra marathon next year, and we'll have to share the story again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Mark. Have a good day.
That's ultramarathoner Kathy Adams. And that's it for this week's edition of iRun Radio. Among our guests on next week's show will be singer-songwriter Sean McCann, formerly of Great Big Sea. He's a passionate runner as well. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.